podcast where I, Lydia,
and I, Ashna,
open up the conversation on sustainability to inform and empower.
We want to connect real people to topics they care and are curious about, but without the jargon or BS.
Join us as we chat about all things sustainability related and how they intersect with our daily lives.
From eating out to what we wear to the latest technology and more.
And we're also going to bring in some really cool guests doing cool things for people and the planet.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Today we're very excited because we're with our very special guest, Chloe, from Nibs Etc., which is probably the most sustainable granola company in the world.
Ooh.
Big claim. and they're fighting food waste with their product, and they also have plastic-free packaging, which is awesome. And it's also refined sugar-free as well and high in fiber naturally. So can't wait to hear more about what goes into the granola. So they make their products using juice pulp, which is really interesting. And that would usually be thrown away. But it's really tasty and really nutritious. And we are going to be doing like a little bit of a taste test later. So that's exciting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've touched on so many topics such as food waste, packaging, cool, you know, food brands, beverage brands doing really nice, cool things. So I guess, you know, really wanting to shed light on that, you know, some of the challenges of these brands of how do you get sustainable packaging? How do you keep the flavor, you know, keep the price point a certain point? So yeah, wanting to cover all those things, you know, also, you know, bringing light to everyone's favorite granola, how that can actually be sustainable and really learning from that and really learning about all the challenges that they've had along the way.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, for something like granola, which is like a really big market, you know, how it is being you know, trying to break into that market and like have your sustainable version, and you know what some of the issues are around granola and sort of like cereals and just products like commodities like that, which we just sort of take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so really excited, and I think, yeah, should we sort of talk more about the challenge?
Yeah.
Do you want to do that?
Okay. yeah, so again, another taste test. We'll be tasting the product, you know, really, not really a challenge. We have any excuse to do a taste test. So, yeah, tasting the product, getting our kind of thoughts on what we think it is, the look, the feel, the packaging as well. So stay tuned for when we do that at the end of the show.
Cool. Well, without further ado, we'll let Chloe introduce herself.
Welcome.
Hi. Hi guys, thank you so much for having me on Switch. I'm excited to be here. So I'm Chloe, I'm the founder of Nibs Etc. We make delicious, nourishing and sustainable snacks out of ingredients that normally get thrown away to fight food waste and also enable our customers to reduce their carbon footprints in so doing. And we like to say that we make probably the most sustainable granola in the world.
I believe you.
So, yeah, I guess, how did you get into the whole, you know, sustainable snacks? Was it, you know, you wanted a snack company and then it just became sustainable? Like, how did that all start from the beginning, I guess?
Yeah. it's a very good question, particularly because it was sort of an organic evolution of, I guess, myself, my interests and my cooking and my increasing awareness of, I think, food and our relationship to it. So to go back to the beginning, just kidding, I won't bore you with that. But looking back now, I can pick out points and phrases or scenes that I experienced that kind of planted seeds along the way. So for example, my parents would say, you know, don't buy what you don't need or finish what's on your plate. We moved to Asia, and that's when I first saw that, you know, the nouveau riche are very much about expressing their wealth in abundance of material objects, abundance of food, especially. And then I moved to the States, and I've never seen so much food presented as a single serving, which was very overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then I moved to San Francisco, after being on the East Coast, and obviously in SF they're quite sort of mindful of food resources and sustainability. So, you know, our compost was in the freezer. A lot of people bought from local markets, and obviously they got great weather for better produce, mm-hmm. so you can buy local. And then when I moved back to Europe, I went WOOFing, which is an acronym that stands for Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms, which was an amazing experience for me. I love Italy and Italian food and language, and I wish that part of me was Italian, but I went to WOOF in Italy, and I was reminded again of the fact that, you know, this sustainable, quote unquote, sustainable way of living, farm to fork, zero waste. It's not a new thing. It's been around for centuries. And in fact, that's how we've begun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in rural parts of Italy, that's how people live. They will never waste a single drop of food. It'll get reheated and reused and recycled until it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, in people's bellies, not
yeah.
landfill. So all of that combined, I then moved to London, having started the blog, Nibs, etc., about upcycling leftovers and zero waste recipes, because I was at home as I started it, and I was sort of in a bit of an existential crisis, and food is sort of my meditation. Making it is very much a happy place, safe place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, we were living in the mountains and I didn't want to go to the shop. It was a bit far. We also had loads of leftovers and things in pantries that had been there for ages. So I realized it was my way of cooking became very much about what was around me. Mm-hmm. And then a year or so after moving to London, I'd befriended a juicer, and it just didn't sit right to see all that pulp go to waste.
Mm-hmm.
It was really an odd thing to see, because it's still a fruit and veg if you think about
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a grated carrot if you've juiced a carrot. So it was really frustrating, as much as I love this juice company and the person who founded it. But so I experimented with it. They thought I was mad. I did a sort of pulp supper club of everything was made of pulp, from pasta to sort of meat-free meatballs, like kofta, breads and baked goods. We all digested that very well because it was a lot of fiber. But ultimately, I started getting asked to do events and pop-ups, and I used some of these recipes, and one thing led to another, and I'd won some awards and some money to sort of take it to the next level, and then I incorporated and kind of haven't looked back since.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was
really good. No, that was really good.
Yeah, can't wait to hear more. Should we do our switch on, switch off moments yeah. before we go any further?
Yeah.
Do you want to go first, one of you?
Yeah, how about you go first? Yeah. You're the guest.
Sure. Honored.
I need to think of mine as yeah, sure. what I really need to do.
I forgot to bring lunch or make a batch cooked meal, so I didn't have leftovers for lunch. So I love to go up the street. There are these three trading stores. I've been there for years.
In the Lake Circle.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Exactly.
There too.
Yeah.
We're in a WeWork in Shoreditch. Just so FYI for the rackety noises. People are having fun. Well, we are too. But so that's where we are for context. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yes. No. Thanks for context. So I went up there and I love the Turkish sort of salad.
Big box. Oh, we're like £3. I mean,
everything's like. Yeah. Overflowing, and it's so affordable and it's so delicious, and it's run by all women, I've noticed as well. It's like really great mm-hmm. stand. And I've been thinking, it had crossed my mind before that I could bring my own Tupperware, and I just forgot, or I hadn't thought. I didn't bring my own container, having realized once I was in the queue, I could probably bring in a container from one that I've had in the past from these guys, because it's the same size. Anyway, I didn't. So she gave me a new one, which is okay because I normally keep them reusing the Tupperware anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then she popped it in another one because it was overflowing so much. And then she gave me a plastic fork before I could tell her, I don't need that because I'm in an office or have my own fork. And then I felt like that meme that's come about after Toy Story 4. I don't know if you've seen it with the plastic fork. The story is about the plastic fork.
Forky.
Yeah. and I forget what the meme says, but it's like you hold on to the plastic fork that you were accidentally given that you didn't wanted, like it was forky.
So that's yeah.
That's such a good, I always think about that when I go to that specific one, and right. I'm like, everybody's in line without a Tupperware, and that's me too.
Yeah.
And you go, and like the sad thing is most people throw those out.
Yeah.
They don't go to their desk, put it nicely wrap it, like, which is quite sad.
It is, especially because it's kind of half decent Tupperware.
It is. Well. It is.
Like, definitely works.
Very good. What about you, Lud?
Mine is kind of, I'm living vicariously through someone else, but I thought it was worth mentioning. So my friend who I play netball with, he was talking to me the other day about this thing he started doing, which is, so he thinks a bit about sustainability, and he doesn't like flying because of it. And we've talked about flying quite a bit and the impact of it. And what he started doing is kind of trying to start a movement by sticking post-its on, you know, those ads that you see on the tube or, you know, elsewhere that advertise cheap flights, cheap holidays. And he started writing on the post-it how much carbon that flight would create and sticking it on the ad. As a way to kind of like say, you know, this is really cheap, but look how much it's costing the planet, kind of thing, which I thought was pretty cool.
Very cool. Very like, you know, activist-y.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how it's taken off yet, but
you got to start somewhere.
Watch the space. Yeah.
What is mine? I've got a couple, actually, I think, that I've just cultivated in my head right now. So recycling. I want to do a whole episode on recycling because I think there's so much people don't actually know about recycling. Mm-hmm. And I think the sad thing is, like, because we're not educated to, like, rinse out our plastics, clean, like, those tin cans, the reality is it just gets chucked in the bin. Like, you're putting the intention to recycle, but then it goes straight to the bin. Same with, like, you know, cardboard boxes. Like, the pizza, like, most pizza cardboard boxes, if they don't have that little sleeve, aren't recyclable because of the oil in the cardboard. And it's like, you really don't think about that. I'm like, oh, cardboard pizza box, recycle. Mm-hmm. So I think as a kind of lesson for myself, I need to educate myself more on recycling. I've actually reached out to somebody today at Veolia to like get a recycling 101, have them potentially on this podcast.
We actually went to Veolia.
Okay.
Southwark, I think.
Yes, they're
yeah, to visit the plant. It was fascinating. Who do we go with? It's the guys who have an office across the street. LWARP, London Waste and Recycling Board.
Very cool.
In partnership with someone else, I've actually forgotten the name of, Advanced London. It was really interesting, so I can't recommend it enough.
Yes, definitely.
There's a lot that we don't know, that we think we know, that
That just isn't communicated. Yeah.
Isn't communicated exactly.
You're like, you know, like a squeezy bottle of ketchup. Who actually unscrews the ketchup and rinses it out and takes out all the gunk from the thing? Like, if you don't actually do that, it's not recyclable.
Right.
Shampoo. Mm. Who actually cleans out the shampoo? Like, if you have it in plastic. Mm. So that's my awareness moment.
Yeah, I think that's true. And we've had a couple of people saying, like, they'd love, like, a recycling 101 episode.
Yeah.
So
it's coming.
It's going to come.
Hunting these people down.
It's now in the pipeline as we speak. Great. Well, those were some good switch on, switch off moments. Shall we dive right in?
Yeah.
To talking more? So you've talked a bit about like what led up to you having the idea and sort of turning it into a brand. How did you sort of, you know, what did you have to do to take it from the idea into like a fully fledged product, brand, business?
Yeah. Like I said, it was very organic. Like, I did go to business school and learn about writing business models and wrote models and feasibility statements and projects, but didn't do it for this because it sort of one thing led to another. And I was very much of the mindset to just say yes and see where it took me. That was a bit of an aha moment during my existential crisis. Mm-hmm. So the moment that it actually became sort of a quote-unquote official business was when I incorporated, and for me at least, and that was a sort of an important turning point. And that only happened because I won an award and to receive the money from which I needed to have a business bank account. In order to have that, I needed to be a limited company. And so, yeah, I had applied for this on a whim, somehow won, realized that I'd won this money as well, and then consequently set up a bank account or incorporated, probably the other way around. And that's kind of when it began. Wow. So that was January last year.
Wow.
Wow, okay. And is it just you working on this, or do you have
Yeah, it's just me full time. I now have two part-time people. I probably started hiring part-time, both to bake and also to sell at Borough Market Christmas time last year.
Mm. Very cool.
Yeah, that's something we haven't mentioned yet. So you do Borough Market.
Yes.
So are you there every week?
We are there every week, only 2 days a week at the moment, hoping for three soon, with our Thursdays and Fridays every week. Nice. And have been now for almost 2 years.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Wow. Good slot.
Yeah, I know. It still feels like I started like 2 months ago.
And how did you said, you know, the pulp, you got the idea from the juicer. Like, how do you actually, like, in my head, I'm like, pulp is literally something I would just like mindlessly throw away. Like, how did you see pulp and think, ooh, I want to turn it into something? And how? Like, how are you turning it into food?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I was talking about those sort of seeds planted. I think that's, and when I was cooking a lot at home, I think it was more, it became a challenge to just not throw things away unnecessarily, mm-hmm. and to see how far resources could go in the kitchen. And I think when I witnessed the juicing happening and all of the pulp ending in the bin, I kind of saw it as a challenge. But also it looked like I said, it looks just like grated veg. Like if you're baking a courgette cake or carrot cake, or you're putting minced, grated vegetables into your bolognese or meatballs or veggie meatless balls. That's kind of how I applied it. Same for, making pasta. I saw in Italy, they put nettle into their pasta and you put spinach into your pasta and thought, well, why can't you put pulp into pasta? Because it's a grated vegetable. It's got slightly less sugar, slightly less flavor, but it still does have flavor.
And so much fiber. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is what you don't get when you drink your juice. It was part challenge, partly I wanted to see what I could do with it out of curiosity. And,
And what type of juice pulp is it? Like, is it a mix of all kinds of things, or is it one thing mainly?
It used to be a total mix, and it gave a slightly different flavor to things. Like when I started focusing on granola, it would taste slightly different if the pulp was more red or green or orange. I've kind of worked my way up in the pulp world, so to speak, to sort of develop relationships with, first it was a few juice bars and now it's just one or two, and because they also have quite strict food hygiene sort of health and safety rules and regulations, they give me clearly the same three ingredients each time, so there's no risk of cross-contamination, so it just means that the flow is a bit more consistent now as well. And I realized I didn't answer your question, Ashna, about how it actually becomes a product, but I break it down, but ultimately just mix it into whatever it is I'm making or baking.
Oh, cool.
As a wet raw ingredient, and then as it bakes it sort of solidifies.
Yeah,
it doesn't sound very pleasant, but it stabilizes.
You should, have you thought of like turning your recipes into, like, have you thought of sharing the recipes or putting them on your website? Or because I feel like so many people could learn from how to take pulp and turn it into products.
Yeah, well, I have actually posted a few. If you wave, the light will turn back on.
Yeah, we're literally sitting in the dark.
And waving. Maybe not.
It's fine.
Yes, recipes. I have actually posted a few already for cakes, muffins, and pasta.
Oh, cool.
I keep meaning to post more. I'll be honest, I'm going to keep the granola and the crackers to myself for now.
Of course.
Just because it's sort of our USP. I would love to share that eventually, but at the moment, while we get off the ground, that'll be our little secret.
And with the kind of, the product ranges, do you find like it's quite easy, like with like the muffins and the cakes, is it quite easy to do, like just dumping the pulp in? Is it like?
Yeah, I guess, it's quite simple to do. it's, if we compare the granola making with a regular granola making process, while the ingredient itself is sort of free, I suppose, because it's waste, the labor and the cost, well, the cost comes in the labor that it takes to sort of, it needs a little bit of TLC to make it sort of readily usable. So there is an extra step in processing the pulp instead of just like bunging things in a big mixer and baking it.
And how do you find kind of what's people's reaction to it? And like, in comparison to other granolas and, you know, crackers you mentioned, you know, what sort of is the comparison? I mean, we're going to taste it later, but yeah, what have people said?
People really love the product. So we were doing crackers last year and sort of since we started, and they were really great, but they're just a bit more laborious to make. And until we can sort of iron out and speed up that process, they're just not as scalable at the moment. So we focused on the granola entirely as of January this year. And the biggest comment we get, other than it being delicious, is that it's not as sweet as most granolas.
Which I love.
You don't need... Yeah, and I guess I never really realized until I started eating and trying other granolas after discovering that I could make this one and realizing like how much sweeter others are. Simply because pulp is quite moist, so when you bake it, you need less sugar and fat to bind. So you get more natural and subtle sweetness from the pulp itself, but also, I mean, we do add a bit of honey to it, and some sultanas.
And I guess with granola and like even just cereals in general, typically when we speak to like different products, it's, you know, being sustainable is sometimes more expensive, you know, like the labor of putting the pulp in versus a lot of the competitive, you know, your competition, which are, you know, these big brands of granolas who probably just do it in a factory for nothing. So how is, you know, being in that competitive environment with some of these big, massive brands?
It's definitely a challenge. And ours is not the cheapest granola on the market at the moment. It's not the most expensive either, but it's not the cheapest. And I know that we'll be able to bring the price down once we scale our manufacturing, which I'm very excited about. But it's a challenge for sure. I think the climate is changing. People are becoming more conscious about what they buy and investing emotionally into what they buy as well. So, you know, you look at two granolas or products or whatever, one is more sustainable than the other. I think more and more people are willing to pay for the product that just does a bit better, a bit more for the environment, a bit more for themselves. I don't like the fact that, you know, sustainability equals more pound signs.
Yeah.
But I have to believe that with economies of scale, if, you know, demand increases for these products, processes will have to become more sustainable, and there'll be more demand for sustainable processes and ingredients and manufacturing in general, which will hopefully eventually bring the price down. That's where I believe it's gonna go.
Definitely.
But it's definitely, you know, it's a challenge without a doubt.
And so where can people find the granola at the moment? Is it just at the Borough Market?
So yeah, currently Borough Market Thursdays and Fridays. They actually just I can't talk about that yet. Oh no, but I can, because this will come out after the date.
We get this so many times. People are like, oh, can we reveal our secrets?
I heard that on one that I was listening to this morning. Yeah, so they'll be launching a click and collect, so you can actually collect later during the day or have it delivered, which is very cool. Our online shop is launching very soon, so sign up to the mailing list to be the first to hear about it. But we also supply a Hackney Down Studios shop called Restore, and they're a packaging free shop. So you can go bring your own containers and buy as much or as little as you want. We also actually offer that at Borough. As of only a couple of weeks ago, we have our very own dispensers. We had a whole new stand designed by Solarwood, a social enterprise using reclaimed wood down in Croydon, and I had some beautiful dispensers from a sustainable company in Germany called Glassbin. So now you can buy in bulk and packaging free at Borough.
Oh, I love that.
Cool.
But yeah, so watch this space for the online shop, and eventually we'll have a subscription service So you can buy sort of, you know, a kilo a month, and that can come in a refill pack, which you would then pour into your glass jar or whatever you have at home, and the packaging will be home compostable.
I love that. I'm such a granola enthusiast. So,
yeah, and it's something like a staple, isn't it? Like you have it, and so a subscription service makes sense because, you know, people that like granola, they always want it in the house. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, the thing we're typically seeing with a lot of the brands that we've had on this podcast and just a lot of other people in this industry is people really buy into the story and mm-hmm. the fact that you guys are actually change makers in the industry. You know, like for me, it feels so much better eating something that actually is, you know, serves a purpose and is, there's a mission behind it, kind of like rubies in the rubble, you know, like brands like that people actually love. So
yeah
I'm excited.
And I meant to say, actually kind of along those lines, and the question about sort of price and, you know, price compatibility, competitiveness, anyway, that word. at least with our granola, I can speak to that. It's a product that will go a bit further because it's because of the fiber, even though it, you know, it took a little bit of extra TLC to put it into the product, but you don't need as much as you would other granolas, because of the fiber. It holds you fuller for longer. It's a slow release energy, so often these products and just, you know, you don't need quite as much of them, or you wouldn't buy as much because it's more expensive, which means that you would appreciate your resources, you'd make them go further. So I think that's really important.
You say that, but like, you know, if I really like this granola that I'm about to try, you know, you should only have a little bit. I'm like dumping a whole bowl. Great, can we try the product now? Starving.
So we've got a bag here of the granola, and we've also got some other ones which we're not allowed to open because it's the new type of packaging. Do you want to tell us a bit about the packaging?
Yeah, sure. So
while we're chomping away.
I should mention this, the current packaging is not entirely plastic free at the moment. It is fully recyclable.
This is the one we're holding,
right? Yeah, the one you're holding.
See, Lydia takes like such a modest
thing. You can definitely take more.
I'm taking more, sorry.
Just gotta try it first.
The new packaging, which it's just taken a lot of time to find. We've gone down a lot of different avenues of sort of alternative, innovative materials. And like I was saying to you, Lydia, the perfect, quote-unquote, sustainable packaging doesn't exist yet. So it's kind of all in development and very new, which means it's sometimes limited on in terms of lead times and order quantities. And sometimes it's gone. Sometimes it's kind of not quite been tested yet. But it sounds really cool. Long story short, we have settled on a grass paper carton box with a home compostable insert for the 500 gram box, and then eventually our 50 gram, so portion size snack packs, will be also in home compostable pack. So that pack is made from...
Is this the snack pack?
Yeah, that's the snack pack, exactly.
Yeah, because really I feel like snack packs are so hard to like get right with packaging.
Yeah.
Which is like,
Exactly. Like, which is kind of a problem for our like growing snacking habit as a nation. But that is made from non-GMO bagasse and corn. Bagasse is like a byproduct from pressing sugar canes for sugar.
Ooh.
Which is interesting. And then the insert is made from non-GMO cellulose. So home compostable again. And then the outer box, which I love the look of, because it's 40% grass, 60% recycled card. So it can't actually be recycled. This will be interesting for your recycling podcast. Post-consumer waste card can't be recycled because of the ink levels in it. So we think it's supernatural because it's craft colored, it's sort of brown, but it means that there are just high levels of ink in it, which means that it's not ever going to be home compostable. Which, to be honest, I don't think I ever knew. I just assumed...
Not home compostable or recyclable.
I just assumed it's card paper, so... No, it is recyclable,
okay,
but it's not home compostable.
Oh.
Okay.
So the craft brown is misleading because it looks earthy, but it needs to be recycled.
So then what about this one?
So this box will be fully recyclable.
Okay.
But I thought that was important to kind of convey because I often sort of misunderstood that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But the grass part in it, so it's 40% grass. It's dried grass fiber, and the production of the grass paper requires a fraction of the amount of water and energy that you need to make regular card.
Wow.
So, which I think is a significant improvement. Yeah. On top of the fact that I think it looks really nice and different. You can see the grass fibers in it. So I'm hoping it will stand off the shelves and it'll help people kind of, you know, they'll be proud to show off the that they bought that's especially saving the planet, like, in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Well, shall we?
All right, yes.
Smells like cinnamony, maybe. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice.
That is nice.
Cinnamony, and what else? What else can we taste? Sorry for the crunching.
Oaty.
What do you almonds, make? Almonds.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys make of the sort of look and feel of it?
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
It looks beautiful. It's like really like chunky.
It looks expensive. It looks like fancy granola that, you know, you would get at a posh hotel. That's my take.
Yeah, it's like
delicious.
In a good way, I hope.
Yeah, like really nice. I'd like to like have this on my Alpro yogurt.
I think that's why people say that they eat it on its own, because it's got these really nice big clusters. I personally love a clustery granola.
Yeah.
And like I just had a big chunk of like a full almond.
There you go.
And it's kind of like, it reminds me of like eating like an oatmeal cookie kind of when it's dry.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
like that cinnamony and nice, like your mom just made you a really nice cookie. Yeah.
Whereas I wouldn't say that about like the sort of more,
I feel like you could definitely eat this on its own. Like I would reach like for a bag of this and just like have it like you have nuts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it would be a healthier snack, you know. So release energy just when you need that pick me up at like 3:00 in the afternoon or 10:11 or whatever.
And so there's no like refined sugar in it.
No refined sugars. There are sugars, obviously, because it's add honey and it's food and
that's
fruit
so good.
And veg. So I just like to clarify for people who say, oh, there's no sugar in it.
Yeah.
But there are no refined sugars. They're all naturally occurring. I think it's sort of 7 or 8 grams of sugar per portion.
That's low compared to a
so,
lot of...
Yeah, like, and like just comparing like what, like for the, you guys listening, what I'm comparing this to, I normally buy supermarket brand granola, typically the big brands as well, which I normally go for, like the nutty ones, because I hate chicory things. But still, like, I think the ones I go for are so sweet in comparison.
Yeah.
And, like,
even
I
when
hate...
they're, like, lower in sugar, it's still, like, at least,
look
like
at you,
10 or 11.
Grabbing for more.
So do you know what? I thought that as well, because this isn't the lowest, you know, sugar content of any granola that I've tried, but it just tastes less sweet than any of them.
I really like it.
And I think that's probably down to the fact that they're all naturally occurring. Like, it's fruit and veg and a bit of honey. Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like kids would actually like this as
kids
well.
Kids do. Yeah, it's
like,
really funny to see a barra. The little
I
kids
would,
really
yeah.
It. Yeah.
I would really like it if I was a child. Like, well... I just think it's not like, oh, it's healthy, it's made from
pulp. It looks like your mum made it, and it's like really homey and delicious.
Beautiful, yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Thanks
for
all the positive feedback. No. That means a lot.
Trust me, if I hated it, I would tell you.
Good to know.
So, yeah, I guess you've touched on where, let's wrap up, and you said... people can find you at Borough Market online is kind of coming soon. What's your website? Tell our listeners where they can find you.
Our website is www.nibsetc.com. You can sign up currently to the mailing list on the landing page, and then you'll be the first to know about when the online shop is live. And you can get your granola subscription ASAP. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Nibs etc, and that's NIBSETC. And come say hello at Borough Market. We're around on Thursdays and Fridays, and we'd love to see you even just for a chat or a sample.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good thing as well, that people can actually go and see you, and you know, you're there at Borough Market.
Yeah, we love that interaction with anybody, people, passers-by, locals, visitors, tourists. It's really fun to engage with them.
Well, yeah, thanks so much for having us. And yeah, for those listening, we'll include the links of where you can find them on the show notes. Also, you can reach out to us at hello@podcastswitch.com or on Instagram to feedback. Also, to give us your thoughts on pulp and how that can be integrated into granola. If you have any cool recipes you want to share with us, we'll share links to all of yours as well.
The blog link I forgot to mention with the recipes using pulp.
Great.
Any of you guys want to try them?
I actually do.
It's the old site, but it's nibs etc blog. So nibsetc the word blog.com. And you can find recipes on there.
Great. Cool. Well, I guess that's everything for us.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much and have a great week, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.